It used to be very clearly in the past that, you know, work is what you're paid for. And if you want to have fun, do that on the weekend, on your own time. You know, we're paying you to work here. We're not going to be goofing around. And so that has traditionally been the concept. And some, you know, CEOs still hold that close. Say that's, you know, no funny stuff here. We're serious about what we're doing. But you could be serious about what you're doing and still enjoy it. You could still enjoy the people you work with. You could still have fun along the way.
Strengths Drive Innovation. Hey everyone, it's Matt here for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, a show where we discuss complex issues related to work and culture. If you're interested in checking out our other content, you can find us at bentohr.com, wherever you find your favorite podcast by searching Thinking Inside the Box, and now in virtual reality, each Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in AltSpace VR. In today's episode, we have a two-for-one special as I speak with Dr. Bob Nelson and Mario Tamayo to discuss the release of their book, Work Made Fun Gets Done, Easy Ways to Boost Energy, Morale, and Results. According to Fortune Magazine's list of 100 best companies to work for in America, 81% of the workers in those companies on the list say they work in a fun environment. Deloitte calls the 2020s the era of workplace fun. With COVID waning, all employees are looking for more fun at work than ever before. And when you make fun part of your culture, workers will prosper, as it's a proven driver of desired results, creativity, and ultimately better relationships. And this formed the basis of a really entertaining, dare I say fun, discussion about all things organizational culture, employee recognition, engagement, and hybrid work. We talked about a world after COVID and how we believe organizations can differentiate themselves from the competition in an increasingly disruptive talent landscape. Against the backdrop of the Great Resignation, fun at work may be more important now than ever before. And now I bring you Dr. Bob Nelson and Mario Tamayo.
Gentlemen, it is a rainy afternoon here in Vancouver, and yet I have a sunny disposition knowing that I'm talking to you two today. I'm excited. We have Mario Tamayo. We have Dr. Bob Nelson joining us today. Gentlemen, first off, thank you for joining me, and specifically would love to learn a bit more about who you each of are as backgrounds, experiences, professionals. Mario, why don't we start with yourself?
I've got about 40 years of experience in the human performance field. I started off as an exercise physiologist, did some work with the men's Olympic volleyball team in the early 1980s. Went on to corporate wellness with doing all the arguments and trying to put wellness programs in at the grassroots level in the world's largest defense contractor at the time. Then I moved up to management leadership development and on my own in 2000. And over the years, I just kind of gravitated toward having healthy work cultures and as recognition and fun work environments help to foster those.
Very cool.
I'm Dr. Bob here, and I had a different path that connected me to Mario. And that is, I was a writer from early on. And I had a chance to work with some greats in business. We both worked for Ken Blanchard. I wrote the 1 Minute Manager. I got my PhD with Peter Drucker, who's considered the father of modern management. And of late, I've been a personal coach for Marshall Goldsmith, who's the world's number one executive coach. So he asked me to coach him, and he said he could tell people you're my coach, and okay, and I've been doing that. So I had a great chance to work with some great people, and along the way have gotten interested in concepts primarily that are simple, proven concepts that people aren't using or getting the most out of. And You know, Voltaire in the 17th century said that common sense is not common. And I think it's even more true today that we get caught up in a whirlwind of activity and things to do. And we often miss the things that can make everything simpler and to make yourself and others more productive and more achieving the goals you want. And so this is one of those topics. And Mario and I met 34 years ago at Walt Disney World, the happiest place on earth. So we were destined to write a book on fun, work made fun gets done. And we've been, we worked together for a number of years with the Ken Blanchard's companies, and we both have left there and we've kept in touch and we keep coming back and
working and, together.
Yeah, I pull Mario into client projects and he does the same for me, and we always enjoy it and we always are laughing when we work together. So this, as I said, this seemed destined that we would do a book on how to help other people have more fun with their work team and have an organization in which that's part of the culture. The book has over 400 real life examples from companies of all types and sizes across the country and even around the world. And it's categorized into things you can do for your individual job and work and task. And we all have mundane and boring things we have to do and how you can make those a little bit more fun. And then, of course, as we're part of working with other people, how you can make that effort, that group effort, more fun. If you're a leader, there's a lot of things you can, in addition, do. And then finally, we cover things that as an organization you can do to make fun part of your culture. And we really feel it's important to do that because it's not, you know, as Inc. magazine says on the cover of our book, that fun is frivolous, we know, unless you want to attract and keep the best people. Then it's not frivolous anymore. It's critical. And part of this book, as in all the ones I've done, are research-based. And part of what especially intrigued us on this topic is that the Best Place to Work Institute out of San Francisco, they create a yearly list of best places in America to work that Fortune magazine publishes. And in that research, one of the dimensions they ask about is fun. Do you work in a fun place? And 82% of employees at the list of the top 100 places to work report that, yes, this is a fun place to work. And they compared that to those companies that applied for the award but didn't get it, the also-rans, if you will, and only 62% of employees in those companies said that it was a fun place to work. So this one variable had a 20-point differential and actually is the most significant differential to identify best places to work as their fun places. So we said we got to take a closer look under the hood here as to what's going on. And that's what intrigued us and got us on this topic. And as the researcher and for the book, that we spent several years collecting examples from companies, all real life examples, and from individuals interviewing people and surveying to come up with the cream of the crop, if you will, in terms of a wonderful starter set to make this part of your reality a little more so than it may be right now. Heaven knows we all need it.
Yeah, I just want to say that. Let's dig into that. So, I mean, we're obviously in a very unique era of human existence insofar as we've never had a shared experience like this before. And when I say shared experience, I mean, certainly we've gone through global events. I think about, you know, the Great Depression, World War II, that affected large portions of the planet. But that combined with social media and the dissemination of information and communication and network has obviously fueled a whole bunch of, you know, incremental challenges from what would have happened 100 years ago if the same situation had presented itself. And one of the great intersections of this challenge, to your earlier point, is work and home, in a lot of cases, have now been completely merged. And for a lot of people, work was on a spectrum of enjoyable and necessary evil, probably skewed more towards necessary evil. It may not, to your earlier point, have been perceived as fun, but it was a relief, if you will, from home. If you have a family, if you're living in a small apartment and like you're all on top of each other, like work could be seen as a reprieve in a lot of cases. I share that because regardless of whatever your opinion was of work, we've now blended them and melded them in a way that they weren't originally intended to be melded. And to me, that would make the idea of fun an even more challenging concept. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, first, how do you define fun at work? And then two, from your perspective, you know, how have you seen the definition of fun, if you will, evolve for present day circumstances?
Well, it's the second part first. There has been this merging of work and home. It used to be very clearly in the past that, you know, work is what you're paid for. And if you want to have fun, do that on the weekend, on your own time. You know, we're paying you to work here. We're not going to be goofing around. And so that has traditionally been the concept. And some, you know, CEOs still hold that close. Say that's, you know, no funny stuff here. We're serious about what we're doing. But you can be serious about what you're doing and still enjoy it. You can still enjoy the people you work with. You can still have fun along the ways. Doesn't mean stop everything and do a dance party for 3 hours. It means along the way you intersperse things that are fun. So even when you have a meeting, you start the meeting with calling out some praise for people that are deserving or a fun activity to get to know each other a little bit better. And it just takes a moment to do that, and it makes the work environment more humane, and it makes the people you're working with as more people that you can get to know and then feel closer to. And then you have a tighter team that's then able to overcome challenges when they arise because they've got each other's back. So it's a very practical thing that you can build into any team, into any organization. And with that, I forgot the first part of your question.
Senior moment.
Define fun. I mean, it's a big question. I know it's a simple question, but I just think fun is.
It is a big question.
What's fun for some may not be fun for others. It's one of the biggest things we found.
Yeah, that everyone has a different version of fun. Like for me, I thought, obviously fun is when you're laughing, you're having fun. But end of story. But if you ask my wife, which I have, what's fun for her, she says, well, when I have a day where I got a lot done at work and I feel proud of that, that was a fun day. I go, really? That's what fun? You're not laughing? You know? And so is the case with everyone I know that I interviewed for this book. They all had a different version of what fun meant. And for some was a sense of purpose, and for some was taking a break and having a stress relief. It was all over the map. And that, I think, is really good news, because now, you know, by opening this topic up and allowing people to bring their own version of fun to it, we can appreciate what's fun for them and enjoy it together. And again, build that human bond that's so important in work.
One of the big ways people have fun is by including their dogs and their pets at work, at the work site. I remember when I worked for Petco, I remember going to their headquarters, and I walked upstairs, and it was an open second floor, looked like one of those big insurance companies, cubicles everywhere. And as I walked up and down the aisles, I peeked into the cubicles, and all I saw were different animals. You know, from dogs and snakes and birds. And it was like walking through Noah's Ark at the work site. But, you know, that was fun for the folks that were there. Other people will play Nerf games in the hallways. They'll have impromptu wrestling matches, even, although lately that probably hasn't gone on. But it's all limited by the amount of creativity that a person has. And we tell people, just try something different. Try something unexpected. As long as you're not taking advantage and making fun at somebody's expense. So we do not believe in having pranks, because they usually fail.
Yeah, a prank might be funny for 2 seconds. You know, I know companies that have had, for example, the Bonehead Award for the stupidest mistake of the week. And for 2 seconds, it's funny. But then the person goes, well, wait a minute, that's why it was so hard, is no one helped me. And now they're upset and ready to quit. And so it doesn't work to have fun at someone else's expense, unless it's your own expense. You can make fun of yourself, and that becomes more humanizing to everyone, that if you can make mistakes, it's okay for them to make mistakes. It's more important what we learn from them when we make them.
So I think, you know, a good definition of fun is anything that takes you away from just the cognitive part of your being, and allows you to enjoy some of the emotional, spiritual feeling part. It used to be, Matt, that when the old days, people were hired because somebody needed a set of hands. And so you were hired to do physical work, physical labor. And then later on, decades later, somebody says, you know, I wish we would stop making those mistakes. So, hey, why don't we start hiring people and having them make decisions too? And so then what we did is we hired for hands, then we hired for head. And now lately, it's we're hiring for the heart, and we are addressing how do we engage the heart at work? How do we make work healthy for the human spirit? And so fun is anything that allows that feeling to come out to be enjoyed.
So people are passionate about the purpose of the organization and not just going through the motions to get a paycheck. And that, there's a big difference in that. And people, they hit it harder and they do it till it's done right if they're truly committed. And you don't do that if you're just watching the clock and saying, well, time to leave. I don't care where the project is. I don't care if the customer's still waiting for an answer. I'm out of here. You know, it's going to be a company that falls apart. So that spirit that every owner has when they start a company, ideally they'd have everyone that joins the company be a part of that spirit, and that passion is achievable. It's achievable to integrate people one person at a time, to have them be a part of that, something larger than themselves that they can be passionate about and enjoy what they're doing and the results of who you're doing it for. And also being prosperous as well, to make money doing it, to earn a salary. And inevitably when you work at something that you enjoy, you tend to do a better job. And so you're more likely to be promoted and be paid more. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We have a quote in the book that someone, I can't remember who, said that I used to think that if I got it wrong, Mara, that you need to work hard to be happy in life. But I realized that it's being happy at what your work you're doing will make you successful in life.
Having fun at work enables and influences people to give their discretionary efforts. It engages them more.
More naturally.
Yeah, a lot more naturally.
And then they end up staying longer too. So for example, and I did aspect of all this is recognition and thanking people. That's a fun activity. People that need that, they want it. 85% of employees right now feel overworked and underappreciated. We are in stressful times, and the pandemic has added to that stress at many levels, and working virtually has added to that stress. It's tiring to be on Zoom all the time. You know, you got to be on full attention, and it's really a little bit unnatural. And so we need to counter those elements to make sure that we're connecting with people, that they're valued for what they did, that you noticed them, you caught them doing something right. And that alone, if you have a culture that does that well, research indicates that employees will be 7 times more likely to stay working for the organization. So in a time where it's very hard to hire people at any level of skill, you have to hire fewer people if you can hold on to the people you got. They're doing a better job for you. So, and then you do that well enough and you become an employer of choice. And then that becomes a magnet for attracting talent you need. So I work with a lot of companies that don't have to advertise for employees, like Zappos, for example, is a company I worked with that they got known for being a fun place to work, that they got a lot done, but everyone told their friends and families about it. They didn't have to put an ad for jobs because people were lined up. They wanted to be a part of it. I worked for Disney for 15 years, and I've met people that have moved to Orlando from, you know, Ohio, because they had to work for Disney. They had to be part of this company, and didn't matter what they did. And so it goes that you have that type of draw because of what you're doing. That's powerful. And it helps make the business enterprise more successful.
Bob, can you mention about at Zappos? I don't remember the figures, but when somebody goes to work there, they go through the onboarding and the training, and then they're told what happens there.
Well, there's a lot of things actually. It's, you know, devil's in the details. They have everyone, even, no matter if you're an executive, you go through the same orientation. It's like a 90-day period where you spend time on the phones talking to customers and whatnot. And at the end of that, they say, well, we know you can do this job now because we've seen it. Now, what we're not sure about is this really the job you want to have? So as a final kind of pop quiz, they give everyone that finishes orientation a check for $4,000 if they decide to quit. So it's a final test. If you're just here for the money, here's the money. You can leave now. And you know, people take that home and say, wow, we could really use this money. Well, is that a job you could see making a difference? Can you have fun? Can you enjoy it? Is there a future there? And the more they talk about it with their loved ones, the more likely they come back and say, you know, nice try, but here's your check back. I'm taking the job.
And many of them are hourly workers, right?
Yeah. For jobs, it's probably gone up. But at that time, when I worked them, their entry-level jobs were like $11 an hour. And so that was like 4 months' pay, basically. So yes, we all need money. But 98% said, no, I'm keeping the job. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just think about it, just to go through that process. If you have a bad day a month later where you know you were intentional and this is really where I want to be and who I want to be with, you're gonna get through that bad day a little easier, you know. And if you were just there for the paycheck, you can be, for a lot of employees today, they start a job with one foot out the door. You know, if their resume is posted, they get pinged if someone reviews it. So a lot of people are very, even when they start a company, they're still second guessing it and not quick to leave. For the millennial generation, the largest in the workplace, makes about 2/3 of all workers are currently from that generation. Their average tenure is 18 months. I work with companies where average tenure, you take someone in manufacturing, the average tenure might be 27 years or 35 years. To have the 18 months would be a revolving door. And that's what a lot of companies today are faced with, especially if they're working with retail or hospitality. They're working with hourly paid employees. You go back to Disney in the Central Florida corridor, where there's a lot of hospitality businesses, a lot of needs. The average turnover for employees in all of Central Florida is about 189% a year. That means almost every hospitality job turns over almost twice a year. For Disney, because they're so good at these concepts, at having fun and being the happiest place on earth and recognizing employees, they've got 250 programs just to do that. Their average turnover is 11%, 11% versus 189%. You've got a lot more stability in your workforce, which means that the training that you give them is going to last longer. People are going to stay with you longer. And as I said, I've met people that have moved to Orlando. They have to work part of this company. And I've worked a lot of people at the company where they've made the whole career there. They started, it was just a job, but the more they did it, the more they loved it. And now they end up making a whole career working at Disney.
Yeah, we have an example in our book about a guy named Bob Small. Bob is an executive, the top executive for resorts for Disney in Orlando. And he used to work what he called small shifts. And one of the small shifts he would do is, on Christmas Eve, he would go out and he'd go into the laundry room one of the major hotels there, and he would work with the staff there in doing the laundry Christmas Eve. And they says, "What, Bob, why are you here? I mean, you're the top boss here. You should be home with your family." And he says, "No, if I expect you guys to come to work, then I'm going to be here with you too." And that went a long way. They thought, wow, I will do anything for this guy. And they did. And he was exceptional. So the part in our book that we talk about is what managers and leaders can do to make for that type of environment that's enjoyable, that's fun, that's rewarding.
Can I ask you guys a tough question? If this is, I mean, and I'm, I'll state my bias up front. I've likely read many of the same research papers that you've read that ties financial performance to having fun at work. And you referenced earlier that a lot of ways fun is a precursor to intrinsic motivation, in which is a precursor to discretionary effort, which is a precursor to productivity. So if the science is there around the psychology of work, and there is potentially several business cases around that being in the firm's best interest, why in 2021 are we still talking about fun at work?
Well, it is a good question. And it's, I think it's a function of that there's a lot of stuff gets in the way. So if you start a company and you're working your best to get it going, and you get investors, and so your focus is very myopic. You know, you got to figure out production, or you got to figure out sales or something. And so it's very task driven. It takes a little bit more maturity to, once that's up and running, to step back from it and say, now what do we need as our needs change, as the organization changes? And once you make it through, you're going to make it as a company. If you then, you know, you come to the point of realizing that in order for us to continue to succeed, we've got to attract the best people and hold on to them. Now, when you're a small company and you only have 5 employees or 50 employees, that's a little bit easier because you're seeing them constantly. You're not bound by a 50-page or 300-page policy manual. You've got flexibility. But as the organization grows, a lot of that goes away. And now you've got policies and becomes more and more, a little bit more bureaucratic, and maybe you even haven't even met everyone that's joined the company. And so all of a sudden you're managing strangers that may not have the passion you had for starting the company. And so that whole spirit of bringing them along and handing off and having them understand what you're trying to do in the niche in the marketplace that you see that you're trying to, for a lot of those employees that come later, it's just a job. It's just a job and it's just a paycheck. And if you meet them at that, then sure enough, you're going to get them showing up, but you're not going to get their best effort because they're not truly bought into a larger picture. I guess the saying is, for any company as they grow, it's harder to do this. And for any given manager, when it's small, it's more immediate and personal. I've talked to a lot of employees. Hey, when my manager first started, he was good about this and surveying people and doing some, taking people out to lunch. He doesn't do it anymore. He stopped doing that years ago. Now he's just barking commands. And most employees say the only time that they hear from their boss is when they made a mistake. You know, when there's a crisis, when a customer's complained. And I just feel bad if that's what it comes down to for a manager, because they've really lost sight of the bigger picture that they've got to be managing to. And they have to have gotten lost in the details. I talked to a lot of managers where they, you know, start each day with a to-do list, and half the times they don't even get to it because there's so many problems to solve and crises, and they'll end up, you know, taking something back from an employee and doing it themselves, you know, and micromanaging. And that's not management. That's advocating. You know, you're giving up your job.
Hey, everyone, it's Matt here, and I hope you're enjoying today's discussion. Before we continue, I wanted to make you aware of our latest creative project, HR in VR. Every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll connect with technology pioneers, business executives from the world's most iconic brands, and industry thought leaders to discuss the future of immersive technologies like virtual reality and their impact on future workplaces. In partnership with Microsoft, we're broadcasting each episode on LinkedIn Live and in front of a live studio audience in AltSpace. Joining is easy. For LinkedIn users, simply follow my account, MattInVR, and stay tuned Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for the LinkedIn live stream. Or for a truly immersive live experience, visit altvr.com to download AltSpace on your Mac, PC, or VR headset and join us live in our studio audience. There you'll have a chance to ask questions, meet me and our incredible guests, and connect with others from the comfort of your own home. This is the future, folks, and I hope you'll be part of it. And I'll link the details for HR and VR, along with all other relevant information in the show notes of this podcast. And now, back to our discussion.
If you find yourself, if anyone finds themselves in that, where they're in the activity trap and they're doing stuff and they're frustrated, you got to open your eyes and say, I'm in a hole. I got to climb out of the hole and start leading the charge, not chasing performance and find out what's wrong and fixing that, telling them to fix it, but getting ahead of the curve and start leading people. And the best way to do that is with positive consequences. And fun's one of those, recognition is another one, involvement is another one, engaging people, asking their opinion and advice, involving them in decision-making. It's a lot of little things, mainly behavioral too. So, and if you get to see that side of it, now you can lead the charge and people bring people along with you by what you notice, because what gets noticed gets repeated. And so it's powerful concepts that a lot of managers and leaders maybe never knew or have lost sight of. And so it's easy to hold on to how we used to do it. And even now, as we have people coming back, you know, to the workplace, it's fun to see how different companies are handling that. And the New York City large banks, they've all said, well, only said that if you can go out to eat in New York City, you can come to the office and work in New York City. And it's very easy to say this is how it's going to be. But in so doing that, they're going to lose a lot of people that are would prefer to work with more flexibility, would prefer to work from home. And we've shown that that works now, and they want to continue. 65% of employees, 71% of employees started working from home during the pandemic. Of those, 65% said they want to continue working from home. Now the pandemic hopefully is winding up. And of those people, 58% say if they can't continue working from home, they will find another job. So again, it's a chance for companies to flex with the preferences of employees. And right now it's clearly an employee's market. They're calling the shots. To meet them at their expectations in order to not just keep them, but to get a better result from them. Or you can hold on to, well, this is how it's got to be. And you could be right, but then you're going to be wrong because it's going to be harder to hold on to the talent you've got.
So it's an evolutionary process. You know, more and more people get it. And when they get into work, they know about it. They believe it. It's part of their value system. But we still have a lot of throwbacks. We still have a lot of influencing and educating to do with young people coming through. There's still a lot of young people coming out who believe in my way or the highway. And that's why we have jobs, you know, it's a constant battle between the old way and the new way. And I recognize this, and I experienced this when I was doing wellness in the 80s. That was a hard sell. That was so tough. It's like, you want to work out, do it on your own time. Same thing with fun. You want to have fun, go do it when you get home. But wellness now and things that are have to do with wellness, those are more acceptable today than they were 30 and 40 years ago. And the same thing I would predict is going to happen with fun and allowing an environment, not allowing, I shouldn't use that word, of encouraging an environment that allows for nurturing and for the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And again, as we keep going through, we're going to find leaders who got through, who are the old way. And again, it's up to us to help weed those folks, either guide them or weed them out. But it's a constant battle.
I wouldn't call it a battle, but I'd say it's an evolution. The work has evolved, and we need to evolve with it to harness the power of getting the most from people, the human element. And I would say for a lot of
people who work for a boss that doesn't want to let them have fun at work, it's a battle because they hate their jobs.
Yeah. And unfortunately we probably all know people that taking a job that they initially they're excited and they come to hate it, hate their boss. And once you know that research shows that when we're at home, employees spend 15% of their time at home complaining about their boss. So if we could move that, you know, and then it makes the home life a little bit more miserable. And then, you know, your kids are learning to be complainers and haters rather than positive and productive. it's fundamentally, if we can move that and say, well, can we have people that enjoy their work, and can they, as well as their managers, do things to promote that while still getting the job done? We're not talking about doing fun instead of work. We're talking about weaving it into work. We're celebrating when you finish a project. I've talked to employees, say, hey, we talk about celebrating when we finish a project, and more times than not, not only do we not celebrate, but we get two projects now to work on. We get more work because, oh, you finished that one. Well, here's a lot more. And that's, you're going to burn people out. And a lot of people are feeling burnt out now and stressed. And so this is a stress relief. And on a practical level, it makes work more productive and people more glad to be doing what you're paying them to do.
Yeah. Way back when, people would say, hey, our company works hard and they play hard. And unfortunately, a lot of people found out when they joined some of those companies, that wasn't the case. And so what we're trying to do now is encourage people to actually practice working hard and playing hard.
Balancing the scorecard. No one, we all need money to live and pay our bills, but no one works just for money. And initially, I don't care who you are, once you have enough money to cover your basic needs in life, our attention focuses on other things, being respected, being part of a team, being part of something larger than ourselves, and being proud of where we work, having a say, being involved in decisions, being asked our opinion and ideas. And if you have a good idea, being encouraged to pursue that. Wow. In research I've done, 92% of employees want to just be asked their opinion. How often do we do that? Not often enough. And 89% want to be involved in a decision making, especially if the decision affects them and the job they're doing. They probably have some valuable stuff to offer. Why don't you check in with them? And even if you're the manager, you've got to make the final decision. You could say, I know it would be a better decision if I have your input. That's why I'm asking. It's not a waste of time. It's to get their buy-in, because then now we'll be able to implement the decision faster if people are already sold on the solution we came up with because they were part of it. So those can sound like tricks and games, but you weave those all together and now you've got a great manager and a great place to work, and anyone can move in that direction. And depending where you're starting, it may not be a quick fix, but if you just take the first step and you open the door, you can increasingly get better at it. And that becomes inclusive. You tap into what other people have to offer and how they want to share. That starts at the simplest level with your own job. Or Mario and I worked together. We did a thing where people, just for fun. And when we started a staff meeting, let's start with a joke. And each week we'll rotate who gives a joke, who wants to go first. And now not everyone was good at jokes, but they got a whole week to practice. And even if they told a joke and it wasn't that good, we all laughed. It was fun.
Those who weren't all that great, they would actually have team members helping them out, preparing them for the next meeting. So it really encouraged a lot of team building.
And they got a little better. So it's whatever the lay of the land is, it's starting there. And trying something, and even on your, it really starts with your own work. We know someone that they just as simple as taking their to-do list, that she crosses it out, and each day she says, "This is my fun list. This is what I get to do today that I'm paid to do. How lucky am I?" And you got a different mental take on it. You feel better about yourself and what you're doing. So you could say, "Well, that's a cheap trick," but it works. It works for her. And you could do something electronically and take it off your list. But some people like writing on a post-it so they can crumple up when it's done and have a physical action that they finish something. It starts with little things, and then you can build that and involve others. And since everyone has a different take on what fun is, that becomes diverse and you get to share other people's perspective. For some people, it's a little bit more purposeful. I remember interviewing a ER doctor out of Los Angeles, and they said that they have fun when on a daily basis, that their mission, their focus is to save lives. And when they can make that happen at work, they have fun doing that, and they're living their mission, and that's what's important to them. Wow, good for them. I want some of that, you know. And for all of us, we can have the same thing. Who are you serving? You know, how can that be a little bit more delightful? How can you make their day? You know, and it's not that hard. It's not that hard to get in the game. And we're hoping that the book we did will make it a little easier for everyone, because you don't even have to be creative. You can just, you know, we already did the heavy lifting for you. We captured real ideas from actual companies.
Most of them are low cost to no cost at all. It doesn't really cost anything to have fun.
Because it's mainly, now you can spend money having the fun and have a huge party and stuff, but at the foundational level, it's behavioral. It's tapping into your work processes and the behaviors and the human connection.
And we often tell people, you can pick up the book and you can open it up to any page and look for something that your group can do to have fun. And if you don't find anything on one page, just turn that page, because you're more likely to find something on the following page.
We've had managers that say that they take the book and this is pretty much of all my books, because I have the same focus on real life examples of what the things I'm talking about look like in practice. And so low on the theory and high on the practicality. And so managers have told me, I take your book, I pass around my team and ask them initial ideas they like in the margin. Now I've got a customized workbook for making this team work better. And that's kind of fun, just the process of doing that, because now you got everyone into the book, and now, and in many ways, all we have to work with is conversation. So now you can have a conversation. What did you get out of that book? And what would you like to do next time? If we make this goal we're talking about, how would you all like to celebrate? Well, you ask that at the front end, and it'll be an incentive if you reach that. Some groups will say, well, can we present our findings to the management team? Well, we've never done that before, but I don't see why not. That sounds that'd be fun. It'd be certainly validating for the people that worked on it. Other people say, well, no, I don't want to do that. Can we have a barbecue? Can we have a barbecue with our families? Yeah, sure, we could do that too. You know, maybe the manager say, well, I'm going to make lunch for everybody. And I actually worked with, I hired a manager from Westinghouse, that he was a sales manager. And it was amazing that he had a tough job, and the team had not made their goal in years, and now he's in charge of making that happen, and he, you know, tried to get everyone aligned, and part of it was on incentives and fun, and he said, you know, boy, this is going to be some, I'm going to be so delighted if we can make this goal together, you know, and if we do, I'm going to make lunch for everyone. And didn't make a big deal out of it, but, you know, and sure enough, they made this goal, and the guy, he brought in steaks and barbecued them, and they on the parking lot of the company, and made a salad and served them lunch as he promised to do. And people were like, well, this is kind of cool. And he goes, no, you know, this has been a great experience. I'm so proud of y'all. I'll tell you what, if we do it again next month, I'm making lunch again.
Very similar to that, we know of a woman who told her one of her direct reports, hey, if you make this deadline here, I'll wash your car. She goes, you will? You'll wash my car? Yeah. So she made the deadline. She brought the car in, and there's the manager out there in her, you know, junk clothes.
Cut off.
She's washing and waxing the car. They're taking video. This was back when they had the old video cameras instead of the phones. And everybody had a blast. It was a lot of fun for them to watch the boss wash the person's car.
And the buzz was, what's going on? Well, Gary's watching Jane's car. Why is he doing that? Because she made the goal. No one thought it was possible. She made it happen. So what are they talking about? They're talking about performance that's helping everyone in the whole company. And Jane becomes a hero. And, you know, hey, will you wash my car? Yes, I will. You know, I know a company in Columbus, Ohio, that during the recession, when things were tough, and they said, gosh, I know people want bonuses and stuff. We can't do that. And they said, well, what could we do? What could we do? And this executive team said, let's make a commitment that we will keep the snow off their car this winter. And every time it snowed, the executive team went out to all the cars and wiped the snow off of it. And let me tell you, employees noticed that, and they felt more like we're all in it together. if they're willing to do a simple consideration like that to help us, we can do our best to help them be successful. It's not hard to do this stuff.
No, it's not. I'll tell you, I was working with one of the plumbing router companies a few years ago, and one guy says to one of his technicians, he says, "You know what? You're doing such great work. I'm gonna send you and your family to Hawaii." And the guy says, "You know what? I'd really like more and be a lot more fun." He goes, "What's that?" He goes, "I'd like that set of Snap-on tools." "Why? Why wouldn't you want to go to?" He says, "Because I love working with my hands, and I'm happen to be remodeling our house right now. And this would be fun if I can get my kids to help me with it. And we've got everything in that kit to make it happen." And the manager says, "Great, have at it." And again, what's fun for some may not be fun for others.
And why it's important to talk about it and ask people, so you're not just randomly coming up with stuff, or a lot of managers will do something that's fun for them and don't care if it's fun for someone else. They just assume it will be. So we worked at a company where the CEO was a big golfer. And so he's, you know, we're going to do a celebration. We're going to do a golf outing together. And for him, it was just another day on the links. But for everyone else, it's like, "Oh my gosh, what do I wear? I'm going to look silly. I'm no good at golf. I've never
done it before."
Yeah. Yeah. And so, wow, why would you want to do something where people are going to be embarrassed, you know? And so you gotta learn from that. And an enlightened CEO would say, "Well, hey, what would work better? What do you all want to do?" And actually, we have an example in the book on that where a CEO was doing that. And, you know, a team building thing a couple times a year, he'd select, and no one ever really liked it. And a lot of people didn't come. And he gave it to another executive and same results. And finally, he kind of wised up and he said, you know, he's like pushing on a rope here. "Why don't I find someone that's good at this, that has some energy for it?" He got a millennial to do the next outing, and they used social media tools to survey people what they wanted. And then same thing with the calendar. They came up with the three ideas and people voted on it, and they ended up doing something they never had done before. They ended up doing one of these medieval shows where there's jousting and people are dressed up serving you turkey legs and stuff. Everyone loved it. Everyone loved it. Families, the kids loved it. And now they, you know, wow. He knew it was important, but he had a hard time getting to what would do it for everybody. So lighten up and spread out the responsibility and get someone else that's excited about doing that.
And that's an important point, because that one guy, after it wasn't just one. In subsequent years, it became a committee. What they do is they got volunteers from a cross section of the organization to serve on a fund committee. And some companies we write about even have a VP of fund. They are taking fund very seriously, and they know how strategic it is and why it is such a gives them such a competitive advantage over other people in their categories.
I was working with I was presenting in Seattle to 800 people in this. One person looked really familiar. I said, "I know I've met you before." He said, "Yeah, I heard you speak about 6 weeks ago, and I had to come tell you what I did." And, "Well, what did you do?" She goes, I left your saying, "This is real. I'm doing it. I'm not going to ask anyone for permission. I'm just going to do this." And I'm going, "Well, what, like what?" And she goes, "We started a happiness committee. It had five people on it. No one knew who any of them were. It was anonymous. But any one of those five people could say, hey, it's time to do something. Morale's dipping, or we got, you know, we just achieved a goal, whatever it might be." And I'm saying, "Well, what types of things did you do?" And it was just all creative, fun stuff, low cost. "Well, we did a lunch up on the roof in downtown Seattle, and we bartered meeting space with the company on the next block over. There's a limo company, and they gave us limo rides for, they didn't have any place to meet for their staff. So we gave them a conference room once a week, and we got free limo rides that we can now give people for achievements or their birthdays, whatever." And on it went, and they got a buzz going in their department, and other managers went to her and said, "What are you guys doing? It's like you're on fire over there. Come to the next meeting. There's no secrets here. Let's have a joint meeting." And it one thing led to another. And I tell you what, fast forward 18 months from that day I first talked to that woman, that company, Perkins Coie, a law firm entered the best places to work in America, number 23 on the list. I would contend from one person in the middle of the organization saying, "This is real. We're going to do it."
So one person, you know, made a difference.
Yeah.
And one person made a difference.
It's easy to say, well, if our CEO's on board, we can do it. And that's always that's always preferred. You know, it's going to happen faster, but it doesn't have to start with a CEO. It can bubble up, and you could show success, and you could speak their language to say the impact that we're having on productivity, on customer satisfaction, on retention, which are all can be translated into dollar figures, and show the payoff of doing these things, many of which don't cost any money to begin with. And get a tremendous return. I worked with a hospital in Hartford, Connecticut, Hartford Hospital, and they had a woman in charge of nurse retention, and she was focusing on first year, and we're short nurses overall everywhere. We're over a million nurses short because of COVID and demands of the baby boomers and whatnot. So it's tough to hire nurses and to hold on to them. She started a first year nurse retention program. And she did it just using one of my books. She did three things and three things only. And it sounds very simple. They'd never done any of this before, that when they hired someone, they gave them a letter of welcome in the first 30 days. Now you could say, well, why don't they do that the first day? Well, they weren't doing it all, so we'll take 30 days. And at 60 days, if they're still there, they gave them a Survey Monkey. How's it going? Is there anything we could do to have done to make your start with the hospital better? That was it. And the third, at 90 days, if they were still there, and some people had already left because they had high turnover, they got those people that were still with them for the first 90 days. They brought in the head of nursing, and they brought the results from the Survey Monkey survey to discuss with the group. They spent the whole budget was they brought in some muffins and a couple balloons, and that was the entire spend on the program. And they went over those examples, and they found that for that group where they did those three things, they had their retention improved 20% for those nurses, which translated to $1.5 million saving the first year alone. Now, if they then went further and actually did some of the items that came up from the Survey Monkey thing, they found that retention further improved and became easier to attract people, and off they went. You know, so this is how any company can do this. Any manager could do this. Any individual can get started in their own sphere of influence and make this real. And that's what we're offering up, to say, give it a try, because you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And now our major concern is, with so many companies now having to adopt the hybrid work environment, our concern and our goal is to help these organizations get the right combination of hybrid work and make sure that they're managing and leading people to nurture them when they have that hybrid workforce.
And to nurture them together as part of it. You can be part of the same team and be in different locations. And instead of, you know, the people that aren't here are out of sight, out of mind, you can keep them in sight. You can keep them visible. You can loop them in. You can do it on the call.
You can include them. You can build it up so they feel included and they feel like they get to collaborate.
Or using the technical tools that are now widely available. It could be from Slack to, we work with a company called Allego that has just incredible video technology that helps people to connect and make it easier to get feedback. You can hear, they can view a video and mark it where they have questions or feedback. And you can just focus on those things when you get together or those things when you collect it for the company. There's incredible tools available today to make all this a lot easier.
So I think we're coming up to 2 minutes to the end of the first quarter. We've got a lot planned for you today. Yeah. You got to stay with Matt Burns and Thinking Inside the Box. We could go for, as you can tell, Matt, we could go forever. Bob can go forever on this thing. I mean, he does this in his sleep.
You know, I love the title of your program too, Thinking Inside the Box, because there's so, you know, the buzz for years is thinking outside of the box. Well, sometimes it's the fundamentals that we've lost sight of. And this is we're talking about connecting people, giving purpose in their lives and having it be enjoyable. And the more we can do that, the more we will capture the whole person. And it's not separate, like we're just going to give you a paycheck for the time you showed up and what you did. It's we need to capture the whole person to get what they have to offer. For example, I honestly believe every employee's got a $50,000 idea. if we can find a way to get it out. And for most companies, they don't even try. For some
what's
of them
the name have, of that, what's the name of that printing company back east in Connecticut, Bob? That book?
Yeah.
What did they do?
Yeah, I worked with a company called Boardroom Inc. They are top publishers of newsletters, 5 out of the top 6 in the country. And they do hard cover books as well. But they, you know, most companies, the way they get suggestions from their company, which is really important because employees have a lot to offer if you check in with them. But most companies, the way they do it is right out of the 1920s. There's a suggestion box in the cafeteria that has a lock on it. No one's ever opened it, you know, or maybe they open it once a quarter and they give it to the suggestion committee who goes over them and shoots them all down. Well, here's an idea from someone about making a suggestion purchase, and they don't even work in that department. What gives them the right to tell us what we should be doing? And they don't even, you know, if they people even hear back, they usually don't. But if they do hear back, it's kind of a form letter. This is why we're not using your silly idea. No problem. I won't bother you again. And the whole thing closes down before it even got started. This company, Boardroom Inc., they put that on its head. They started a program they called it iPower. They ask every employee to turn in 2 ideas every week. Can you imagine every employee 2 ideas every week? Well, the first week that might have been easy. Why don't we fix the printer on the second floor, you know? But then it seemingly got harder, but it actually didn't, because people got thinking more about their job and what happens before it gets to them and what happens to the work afterwards. And they thought more about the customer. There's an endless stream of ideas that any employee has to offer. And it was amazing. Instead of having a formal committee to evaluate and shut these people down, they had volunteers from the group to go over the ideas that came in each week. And they said, we're trying to celebrate these ideas. So someone would read an idea. This is a great idea. You should really do it. And they'd give it back to the person that suggested it. And let's know if we can help you with your idea. That's a winner. And as a result, they got thousands of ideas. They didn't implement all of them, but who cares? They implemented a lot of them. And year after year, doing just this one simple thing, but doing it very well, led to a 5-fold increase in their revenues in just a 3-year period. 5-fold increase in the revenue just by asking people for ideas for how we could save money, how we could better serve the customer, how can we improve processes around here. I remember one of them was when I was there, a suggestion from someone in shipping. Here's an hourly paid worker in shipping that he said, you know, next time we get this book order, they had these large hardbound books they gave us premiums and stuff. Next time we got an order from the printer, if we trim the print size by 1/16 of an inch, it'll fall under the next postal weight. And we'll save some money on postage. And they're going, wow, it's you. And they cut up a book and they did that. They saved, honest to God, $500,000 the first year because of that one suggestion. The CEO of the company, Marty Edelson, he told me, Bob, I've worked in direct mail for 27 years. I didn't even know there was a 4th-class postal rate. But to the kid that's working in shipping, that's staring at the chart day in and day out, he knew it was. If we can get into his world and pull from it his suggestion for how we can do better. And, you know, he became a hero and inspired other people to make suggestions. And on it went. It had unintended consequences that were positive. They went from having a revolving door turnover to no one left anymore. Why would you? You can make things happen here. It became a place that people wanted to join because it was fun and exciting. I remember talking to a woman on her first day of work. I actually caught this on video that she said, I came to the office and I didn't even know where I was sitting yet. I was pulled into a meeting, and within 30 minutes of coming into this company, someone turns to me in a meeting and says, what do you think we should do about this problem? She said, I almost fell on the floor. I just came from a job I had for 8 years at a different company. They never asked me my opinion about anything. And here I don't even know where I'm sitting yet. They want to know what I think. And it actually felt pretty good to give them my thoughts. They weren't refined, but then the more I thought about it, the more refined they got, and the more excited I got about making suggestions. And that's the power. That's the power of this. And that's a simple involvement technique. It doesn't cost you anything. Like I said, 89% of employees say, I want that. I want to be asked. I want to be involved. in decisions. So it's really taking that research base and finding ways to do these simple, common sense notions that actually do empower the spirit and the soul, where it makes people want to do more of what they're doing with who they're doing it and who they're serving. And it makes the manager's job actually easier, because the commitment goes up, and now instead of lecturing people and blaming them on problems, now you're celebrating their successes. And, you know, Peter Drucker says that management is getting the work done through others. It's not being a super worker and trying to be the smartest person in the room and micromanaging and taking work back and doing it because I can't trust you anymore. Well, that's a dead end. It's getting the work done through others. It's serving them. How can I help you? It's not, you can't do all those jobs. You're just one person. But if you're managing people, whether it's 7 or 700, what can you do to make their jobs easier? Because doing that will make them successful, which is going to make you successful. And it's coming at it from a different perspective than sometimes a lot of managers do.
Gentlemen, I think that's just, first off, a really great way to end almost an hour of really sage advice.
Conversation. What?
This happens. We get talking and then time flies by. And before you know it, it's Sunday. But it's not Sunday, but
it's a two-parter for you,
right? But it has been a fantastic conversation. And I think, you know, one thing I'll just take away from the conversation, if nothing else, is just how simple this is and how much each of us have the ability to influence fun, in our individual workplaces. And I think a lot of times it's easy to distance ourselves from the problem and think it's somebody else's solution to come up with. And in this case, each of us have a role to play in making workplaces more fun. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today. Looking forward to continuing this chat offline.
Thank you, Matt. It was a pure joy.
At Bento HR, we enable your HR strategy with custom HR technology procurement, implementations, and integrations to liberate your team from administration, enhance their productivity and experience, to position them at the center of your organization's transformation, where they belong. With experience as an HR executive myself, I have a real appreciation of the challenges facing today's HR leaders. The world is changing. Your industry is being disrupted. Your organization is transforming. And all the while, you're trying to do more with less. You're being asked to simultaneously model fiscal restraint while the expectations of your departments are only increasing. At Bento HR, we can support you at every stage of your transformation, from architecting the strategy to developing and selling the business case internally. We support procurement, implementations, and ongoing sustainment. And we tie it all together with a deep knowledge of the HR profession and over 6 decades of combined experiences from our founding team, who has worked in or supported large HR organizations across multiple industries, including, but not limited to, financial services, technology, retail, transportation, and healthcare. Check out Bento HR today to build your very own Bento box, which doubles as your business case for transformation. Leveraging recent research into the upside of digital automation inside organizations, and with your help in answering a few simple questions related to your organization, our Bento Builder will provide a directional business case for change. So log on to www.bentohr.com and build your Bento box today.